Yeah, he was a Tommy Tappen, continuing to talk about Yom Kippur. So, I guess Yom Kippur Katan was today, so we were definitely in sync with the proper Zmanim. So we left off last week talking about the different Inuyim. So we spoke a little bit about Chilul Shtiyah, then we spoke a little bit about Rechitza, I think Sikh a little bit. I think we stopped at Nirsa Sandal, if I'm not mistaken. We fell short in Nirsa Sandal. Okay. So when we speak about Nirsa Sandal, so here we run into the same Achloikis that we had last week about all the other Shari Inuyim. According to the Rambam Shita, so the Shari Inuyim are Nirsa Deraisa. Nachayv Kores, the Rambam says, is that a lav? There's an Nirsa Resay of Shabboson that includes all the Shari Inuyim. But other Rishonim disagree on that. Many Rishonim hold that the Shari Inuyim are all the Midrabanan. So the Gemara has a whole discussion in the end of Maseches Yuma about how exactly to define what's called a shoe for these purposes. So the Gemara has one opinion that says that a shoe is only considered to be something that's made out of leather. It's not made out of leather, even though it's the most comfortable, most protective thing under the sun. So that's not considered to be a shoe. And it's not clear whether we pass it like that. There's a big machlokes in Rishonim whether that's the maskana or whether no, that the definition of a shoe means whatever is megim, whatever protects, whatever is comfortable in the foot. So that's considered to be a shoe. So it's a machlokes in Rishonim what that loch is. So the Shulchan Aruch is making on the Shaila. Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinion of the Rishonim that as long as there's no leather in it whatsoever, so then it's a mutal chetchila to wear. And others disagree, the Rambam disagrees. The Vilna Gaon is quoted in the Maaseh Rav that the grow is machbid. To follow the Shita Sarambam and wouldn't wear any kind of protective gear on the foot on Yom Kippur. So this is a Shaila. So the different opinions b'zman is there. So most people are making on this. That's the Pesach and Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah also gives us blessing to the Shita, and that's the way the general Midah Goyim is. So most people wear canvas sneakers and crocs and all kind of the above, which even though they may be very comfortable, maybe more comfortable than regular shoes, but we assume that those are all mutar. In the Yechidi school, there are some more machra for the Shita Sarambam. The Shita Sagra, that they won't wear anything that's very comfortable, that gives any support, any good feeling on Yom Kippur. The last of the Inuyim is the Yisuf Tashvi Shanita. So again, the same Pizmon. Whether or not this is their eyes or not, depends what you think about the other Inuyim. But clearly there is an Yisuf Tashvi Shanita. So the Poskim have a discussion about whether the Harchokot should apply on Yom Kippur. You know, the Din Hilchos Nida is when a woman is a Nida. So there are a whole array of different Harchokot that are instituted. Some of the Harchokot may be deraisa, some of them are derabanan, some of them in hagim. It's all kind of different things that husband and wife are not allowed to do. So the Mishnah speaks about not eating at the same table. That's part of Chabit Rabbat on Yom Kippur. What the Rishon talk about not passing things one to another, or the Gemara talks about not pouring wine to one another, or an array of different, not sleeping in the same beds, an array of different kinds of Harchokot. So that whole sugya about our chokos is a question whether that carries off to Yom Kippur or not. So there are some who say, yeah, some who say that whenever there's Nisr Tashra Shemitah, so we should insist on being machmer on our chokos as well. And it's not clear whether that's really Mikra Din, not if we're necessarily agrees to that, but I think that most people try to be machmer and that in Yom Kippur. Mishnah Bura quotes an interesting chiluk in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, the same shal that surfaces Lagabi Yom Kippur surfaces Lagabi Tisha B'Av, because all the Inuim are the same. So Mishnah Bura quotes that there are some who wanted to differentiate between Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av vis-a-vis the Achokas, that on Yom Kippur, so the women are dressed up nicely for Yom Tov, whereas on Tisha B'Av, everyone looks miserable, everyone's sitting in the Eifer, sitting in the Sakf Eifer, Yitzhar Rav, and everyone looks miserable, so then there's much less of a Yetzara. So therefore, maybe on Tisha B'Av, you don't have to be so machmir on the Achokas. I don't know, the question is whether that applies with Manazan. I don't know what they look like in Rad and Tisha B'Av, but I know that in camp today in the mountains on Tisha B'Av, women probably don't dress all that differently than any other day. So I'm not sure that that's where the Mishnah Bura necessarily carries the day. I don't know, I'm not sure if it's Tzorchian, but in Yom Kippur, I think that many people are machmir on this to try to observe the halachas, the Shmin Hagim, the Archokis on Yom Kippur. It's because there's an Issa Tashma Shemitah in Yom Kippur that led to the whole sugi in the fourth brach of Maseches Pesachim about Ablokas Neiris on Yom Kippur. The Mishnah says that whether or not you have to light a candle, if you light a bench lech, the nerve Yom Kippur, so the Mishnah says that's Talib Minig HaMokum. Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's a real din, you have to light candles. But on nerve Yom Kippur, so there's no real halach of lighting candles, there's no real loineg, you're not going to have a suit anyway, so why should you light candles? So the Mishnah says, B'bach Mishnogu L'Havdik Madlikim, B'bach Mishnogu Shalahadik L'Lam Adlikim. What does it depend on? So the Gemara says, Shneem L'Skavl Dover Echad. Both Minhagim are trying to accomplish the same thing, that the minig where the two light and not the light was all to protect to prevent the couple violating Tashrei Shemitah. So one place they had the minhag that they would dafka not light candles in the house. Every Yom Kippur, your husband would come home from shul, so he couldn't see his wife. So he doesn't see his wife. He's not going to have any yetzahara, so that'll prevent them from violating this iser of Tashrei Shemitah and Yom Kippur. And the other minhag was no, you dafka leave a candle on, because there's an iser of asal shamash the mitas or haner. That's considered like a breach of tzniyos. The Gemara says you're not supposed to have tashrish in front of a lit candle. So somehow that will remember. The fact that it's awesome Yom Kippur Kortzim Rishomis Derai, so that somehow he's going to forget. But Terry says like Chometz Pesach, like things that happen once in a while, so you don't think in those terms. But everyone knows it's lichtin kup that you're not supposed to be mishashu tassli arneya, so that he's not going to violate. So that's where there are two different hagams. So the meaning in our communities is that we do light neiros on Erev Yom Kippur, and the fundamental, the main primary reason is for this purpose. That's why Taka makes sense. Many people say it makes sense that you should light something in the bedroom. Very often we light our candles downstairs, no candles on in the bedroom. That's not going to do the job. So there are some who are not advocating leaving candles upstairs. It's not always the safest things to do. So what probably a good idea is, according to those poskim, is to turn on an electric light to make sure there's a little night light or something. You should make sure that there's a light on Erev Yom Kippur in the bedroom, so that'll accomplish the ikar purpose of this minhag. That's what our minhag is, that we do light candles on Erev Yom Kippur. Okay, so we pretty much finished the Isur of Yom Kippur Brusei. So we have really two more sugyas left in terms of Yom Kippurim. One is the issue particularly of Cholim on Yom Kippur, and we didn't really talk about that at all, right? I mean, just kind of passing quickly, but we didn't talk about Cholim too much. And the other is about the Minhagi Hayoim in terms of Chos Tefillah and different Hagis, different mitzvahs that apply during the course of the Davening in Yom Kippur. So we'll start to tackle the sugya of Cholim first. So the Mishnah tells us in the end of Maseches Yuma that Yom Kippur is similar to all other areas of Halacha, with the exception of the Gimla Averis HaChamuros of an Azorgi, the Rashi, that Yom Kippur, of course, is one is permitted, one is required to violate whenever there's a Chashash of Sakana. So the Gemara says that for the purposes of Sakana, we don't follow Rove. We don't say, well, the odds are it's probably going to be okay. So there's no such thing. We're Chashash from here. And a philosophic Sakana where Mechal Shabbos, philosophic Sakana, we're going to be Mechal Yom Kippur. The Mishnah gives us an example of a suffix sakana, is you have an uber she'ericha, you have a woman who's pregnant, and she starts to get these cravings, and she starts to feel very, very needy of eating. So the Gemara says, first she explained to her Yom Kippur, and hopefully that'll calm her down, but if she goes nuts, she's much more crazy, she has to have this food, so then machil nasa, then you're permitted to feed her. So the Rishonim have a machlokes. What exactly was the pikuach nefesh? What are we afraid is going to happen? So some Rishonim say we're afraid she's going to miscarry. So if we're afraid she's going to miscarry, the pikuach nefesh is out to the vlad himself. And the other Rishonim say, no, the vlad is not considered to be a nefesh. And you wouldn't say pikuach nefesh for a vlad. The pikuach nefesh is for the mother, because if she's going to, that she may die, not the baby may die. The baby will also die, but she's going to die. So that's what the pikuach nefesh is. And that sugya, there's a major machlokes in Rishonim about, is an uber considered to be a nefesh vis-a-vis the sugyas of pikuach nefesh? So the simple shot in that machlokes is that at what point does a person become a nefesh? What time does life begin? So that which they've been fighting out in the Supreme Court for the last couple of decades, is life begin at conception, life begin at birth? So that seems to be the machlokes in the Rishon Halim Shan, this Mishnah, about uber she'ericha. So the Ramban has a comment that Maseches Nida, but he thinks that's not correct. He says that le'olam could be that life really starts at birth. It's possible that, let's say, if a person kills an uber, a person aborts a fetus, so it's a big machlokes Rashi and Ramban, is that Ritzicha now? So the Ramban says le'olam could be that's not Ritzicha. Maybe or maybe no. It's not necessarily Ritzicha. The uber is not necessarily really halachically alive. The Afa doesn't say abortion is a mut, even according to those who say that ubers are not technically alive. It's also for other reasons, but in terms of is it mamash v'chus dam, it's not clear. So the Ramban says, but Afa b'chein, you're still allowed to will be Mechal Shabbos, you're still allowed to eat in Yom Kippur to save an uber, because the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Yuma that there are two sources for pikuach nefesh, multiple sources, but the two famous sources are, one is v'chayev ev lo shiyamos b'hem, and the other is v'shamu v'nes osa Shabbos, chalal Shabbos achas, k'nei shiyish b'shamos harbis. And Ramban develops a whole yisoid that you can have one without the other. That, let's say we have an uber, so it could be an uber's not chai. So Shayasa Solomon Bachaibram doesn't apply. He's not alive. The mitzvah is to keep people who are alive alive. There's no mitzvah to bring people into the state of being alive. So Bachaibram doesn't apply to an uber, but it's still a good investment. Chalal Shabbos Achdish Mishmazarbe. Because if you Machal Shabbos or Eden Yom Kippur, that's going to save the uber. The uber will be able to survive and he'll have 120 years of Shabbos in Yom Kippur to his credit. It's a good investment. So there's a famous Pekuch Nefesh Sugya about there seem to be three different shittas in the Rishonim about saving an Uber. Some Rishonim say there's a din of a Chayib Haman Uber. Other Rishonim say there's no din of a Chayib Haman Uber and you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to save an Uber. And The other Rishonim say no. That the Ramban says that there's no v'chaybem, there's still v'shamru. So the Rosh in the end of Masechus Yuma writes that he doesn't understand what the Rishonim are talking about. He says, what are they arguing about? He says, everybody knows that medically, if the woman's going to miscarry, it's a chashash to come to the mother. So the Rishonim are discussing as if we can separate between the two, as if, well, we'll save the mother and the Uba's going to die. The Rosh says that the woman's going to have a miscarriage, to be hemorrhaging, have all kind of potential chashashes of pikuach nefesh to the mother itself. So it's a moot child. It's a medically moot child, says the Rosh. Of course, every miscarriage is going to be pikuach nefesh to the mother. That was probably true in the Middle Ages. I don't know if it's not as that. No, you have to figure out, if there's the doctors, whether that's 100% true. At the end of the day, we assume halacha that this is all midei sfeikel enough, and if any concern of a miscarriage or anything like that, we treat that as safek pikuach nefesh, and therefore one's permitted to be mechal Shabbos and eat in Yom Kippur for that. So definitely the din is that pikuach nefesh is mat eating in Yom Kippur, and even concerns of miscarriages fall into those category. Then the Mishnah talks about a woman who's in labor, so she's also allowed to eat in Yom Kippur. And a woman who just gave birth, a woman just gave birth, so she needs her strength also. It's also considered to be chashash and pikuach nefesh. So the Gemara has different shiurim. The Gemara says that for the first 3 days, so we assume that a yoledet is considered to be very, very weak. She can't take any chances without fasting. After 3 days, it depends on how the woman feels. You have to ask her. If she thinks she needs, then she's allowed to eat. If she doesn't think she needs, then she shouldn't be eating. So the possibility of very makel on this is manazah. So any time there's any concern, any chashash whatsoever, that the woman may still have to eat. So until 7 days after the birth, we assume that that's okay. If it's within 3 days of the birth, even if she says, I feel great, I feel fine, I'm running around outside of it, within 3 days, chalom mishayer, that's always considered to be a safek pikuach nefesh. The Gemara has a whole sugya in the end of Maseches Yuma about what if you have chiluk deis about whether something is pikuach nefesh or not. So let's say you have a guy and you can't tell if you really have to eat, not really have to eat. So the Gemara says that we make it on all sides. So if the chayla says he has to eat and the doctor says I don't think he has to eat, so then we feed him based on the testimony of the chayla, because levi demar stafsho. Sometimes a person could be clinically be okay, but the guy knows he feels miserable. So if he feels sick enough that he's claiming that he may die if he doesn't eat, so then misafik, you feed based on him. Let's say you have the other way around. The chayla says I'm doing great, the doctor says no, you're not. You're doing terrible, and you may die if you don't eat. So then we feed based on the doctor also. So we take the cools of all equations, because safik nefesh always goes lahakal. And the gemara says, let's say you have a machlekes in the doctors. One doctor says he eats, one doctor says he doesn't eat. So the gemara says, so then he has to eat also, misafik, lays brayer, that everything is a safik, so we have to throw our hands up and say, we did safik alanaf, and everything is safik nefesh is always going to go lahokum. When we feed a chola on Yom Kippur, so the Shechavar quotes that you have to try, if possible, to minimize the issur, if at all possible. So we mentioned in the previous shiurim that eating on Yom Kippur, only if you eat a kesevis agas mechdechlis bras, is that in the sukkaris. If you eat less spread out than that, let's say if you drink moly lugba bichdei, either shtiyas or shtiyas pras, whatever the machalik zushin was, so then you have karis. If you spread out the drinking more than that, so then there's no chi of karis. So Shechara quotes that if and when you could try to help the person get his strength back without going over the maximum amount in terms of the shiur, you should try to do so. That's what we call mechilas al pachas pachas mikis shiur. That's a din b'fresh in Shulchan Aruch. If the doctor says it's not a good idea, the doctor says it's risky, we're not sure that it's going to do the trick, then you just feed him normally. If the doctor says he could survive with eating pachas pachas shiur, so that's a din, you have to feed him pachas pachas mikis shiur. So it was a big machlokes between Reb Chaim and others about what the parameters of that statement was. Reb Chaim had a famous chiddush. Bereshis Rav quotes this. It's Nobel. Also, Rav quotes it from his father in Chushvus Zalzar, that Reb Chaim held that b'medivar mamurim, that you have to feed somebody pachas b'gashia, that's if he's not yet a chayla. If you have a person who right now he's doing okay, but he has a condition, he predisposed to getting whatever conditions he has. He dehydrates all the time, and then he's going to get who knows what kind of medical complications. But right now, he's doing great. So the Reb Chaim said, we have a person right now is okay, but just al shema asid. So yeah, there's a head to pikuach nefesh shema asid. You don't have to wait till he gets sick. You don't have to wait till he ends up in the emergency room. You could try to prevent him from getting to the emergency room. Reb Chaim says, but right now, he's not a chayla yet. You can't feed him yisurei karis. You have to give him pachas pachas b'gashir. But if he's already a chayla, then Reb Chaim says, so then you can feed him whatever you want. That does make a difference. Then you can feed him straight. There's no lechet chila to try to pachas pachas b'mashiach. What's that based on? Reb Chaim know that distinction. So his son, the Bereshis Rav, explains that Reb Chaim was based on the Magid Mishnah and Perek Beis Hilchos Shabbos, the famous Magid Mishnah Hilchos Shabbos that says that when you take care of a chayla on Shabbos, so the Mishnah says osin kol tzarchei chayla. So you're allowed to do all the tzarchim of the chayla, even those tzarchim that are not necessarily emergency. Let's say, l'moshel, you have a chayla guy laying in the hospital on Shabbos, very, very, very sick, and the doctor says he needs an operation. Okay, everyone agrees. The doctor says we don't have the operation, he's going to die, so you do the operation. The doctor says we must do the following test, that we don't run the following MRI, CAT scan, X-ray, who knows what. The person may die. So, okay, everyone agrees. You have to do whatever Chil Shabbos the Reis is showing, you're allowed to do. But what if the doctor says, listen, right now he's really bad. This guy's in bad shape right now, but you know, he's stable. And the grandmother comes in and says, he needs chicken soup. I'm telling you, he needs chicken soup. So the doctor, what's going to happen? Does he need the chicken soup? So the doctor says, listen, it's not going to hurt. It may make him feel a little better. It'll probably calm the grandmother down. You know, he would probably appreciate the chicken soup, but is it medically going to make or break his prognosis? Probably not. Definitely not. So the Magamish is a Chiddush Gadol, says you can make the chicken soup, you can cook the chicken soup with Chil on Shabbos. The Baba can cook the chicken soup on Shabbos, Chil Shabbos, the rice, the bishul. Why? Because that's called Tzorchei HaChoyla. Because if it would be Tuesday, so we would give him food, we would make him, he would feel better, he'd feel a little, enjoy the chicken soup. So you're allowed to do the chicken soup on Shabbos also. That's called Olsen Kol Tzorchei HaChoyla. It's a Chiddush Gadol for the Magamish. So Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted by the Shabbos Kachosla saying that even the Magamish, the buck stops here. It has to be some kind of a real tzorech hachoyla, something that we would consider to be a need of a chayla. It's a need. A guy needs a good bowl of soup. That's a chayla's need. We'd say big chayla about that. What if it's not a need? What if Shomzal was trying to give an example of something that the chayla is requesting? It's a desire. We would call a want, not a need. When my kids were little, so I used to always make them make lists of their wants versus their needs. So I used to always want to hear that the Torah was on the need part and then the ice cream and the pizza was on the want thing. They usually got them a little bit mixed up. So Shlomo Zalman says, let's say a chayla says he wants something, but it's not a need. It's not a medical need. It's not a health need. It's not a physical need. It's a want. So Shlomo Zalman was such a tzaddik. He said, I'll be sitting in Shari Chesed trying to think what could a person possibly ask for. What could be like that can tell a chashash chol Shabbos. Shlomo Zalman said, he asks for somebody to go to the store and buy him a newspaper. That's what he wants. He wants to read. He wants to read Hamadir. He wants to read on Shabbos. He wants someone to do Chal Shabbos to bring him a newspaper. So Shlomo Zalman was an Olal Adas. He wants the TV on. That he wants his phone. He wants to watch a video. He wants to go to the movies. Shlomo Zalman wasn't Gers. He wants a newspaper. So Shlomo Zalman says he doesn't think he can do Chal Shabbos to get him a newspaper. A newspaper is not this chicken soup. So there are three daggers. There's the doctor's medical needs. Those are for sure mutter. There's the bubby's physical needs. So the Makamishas Mechadish, that's also mutter. But the guy has a want. He has a desire. It's all right, once we read a newspaper on Shabbos, that you can't turn on the TV. That's not even Bechlal the Magen Mishnah. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests. But I hope I'll get back to the story. So the Brisker Rav quotes that just as the Magen Mishnah held that whatever's called the Tzorchei HaChoyla's Mutter, why is the Tzorchei HaChoyla's Mutter? Because basically, it's Kechol L'chol Devarov. That means the Gabi, the Tzorchei HaChoyla, today is not Shabbos, today is Tuesday. It's like a Gedra Chutra. So the Brisker Rav says, that's Rav Chaim held, the same is true for Yom Kippur. Just the Shabbos is Hutra and Kol Tzorach HaChol Mutter. So to Yom Kippur, Kol Tzorach HaChol Mutter, the normal Tzorach of a Chol, like I mentioned. When was the last time that on a regular Tuesday you fed a Chol, Pachas Pachas Bikashir? So the normal Tzorach HaChol is to eat like a normal person, to drink like a normal person, not to sit with shot glasses and look at the clock every 15 minutes. So that's called Kol Tzorach HaChol. So the Shulchan Aruch says you have to feed Pachas Pachas Bikashir. No, the Shulchan Aruch was talking about he was not a Chol yet. So if he's not a Chol, he doesn't have a Gavra. It's a brisket Torah in medicine. It's a Gavra for the Chol. It's a shame Torah. He's got to have the official, he's wearing the hat of a chayla. Once a pidin, he's called a gavra for the chayla, then Yom Kippur's hutul choldover, and then you can do kol tzorach. Again, you can't watch TV, but you can eat and drink in a normal fashion. That's a famous word from Reb Chaim in the Brisker Rav. So it goes without saying that if you don't accept the Magen Mishnah, then you're not going to accept Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim was an extension, was a corollary of the Magen Mishnah. So the Mishnah Bura in the Be'er Halacha in Hilchos Shabbos quotes the Magen Mishnah. He claims that he thinks moved the Rishon Lohavla. He said he thinks it's a chiddush gadol she'en kamoyu. You're allowed to cook on Shabbos. The doctor says he doesn't need it because the grandmother says he's gonna feel better. So that's a matter of mechatayse. So the Mishnah Berurah doesn't accept this Magen Mishnah Shabbos. So Kavachomer, he's not going to accept Reb Chaim the Brisker Rav's psak in Hilchos Yom Kippur. That's why when the Shulchan Aruch writes that a choyle machilus or pachas pachas yishil, the Mishnah Berurah doesn't give this chiluf and say hochav ma'askidon that he's not really a choyle. The Mishnah Berurah says kipshuto that he is a choyle gomor. Again, as long as it's medically feasible. If it's not medically feasible, so the person has to drink a lot right away, it's going to dehydrate. great right away. So that, okay, that's a different story. So how do we pass in halacha? So yesh, different rabbanim have different psachim about this. There's some rabbanim who follow just straight mishnabura conventional wisdom that what it says in Shulchan Aruch explicitly beferish that you have to always do pachas pachas b'gashir. And there are others who follow Reb Chaim's tradition that if he's a real chol already, then kol tzorach was mutar. So I once had this shayla at a talmud of mine years ago who had a quirk of an emergency surgery like the day before of Yom Kippur. So one the thing came up, he had to have a baksham. Now it's totally fine. Years ago, he had a crazy emergency, very serious surgery the day before Erev Yom Kippur. So I went to visit him in the hospital on Erev Yom Kippur. So he was on IV. He was going to remain on IV for the duration of Yom Kippur. He wasn't eating anything in Yom Kippur. So usually when a person's on an IV, very often they get very dry in the mouth. So they usually what they do is give them these ice chips to suck on, to keep the mouth moist. So he asked me, is he allowed to suck on these ice chips on Yom Kippur? So I asked him, what's the medical need for these ice chips? So he said to me, there's no medical need, just to make me feel a little more comfortable. So I said to him, it's a machlekes to my commission, the other Mishnah, machlekes Reb Chaim and the Mishnah. I said, you're a chodesh yesh b'sagon, you're laying there in the hospital, just had a major emergency surgery yesterday, you're laying there with the 300 tubes inside you, but you don't have to eat, you're not going to eat anyway, he's on IV anyway, he's not eating anything. So the question is that called tzorche choylein? On a regular Tuesday, he would haray every Yom. We had the ice chips in, so can he continue to suck on the ice chips to make him feel a little more comfortable? So that's like the equivalent of the grandmother's chicken soups. It's not the newspaper, and it's not the doctor's emergency CAT scan. It's the grandmother's chicken soup. So is that mutter or not? So I told him, it depends on this machlekes. So he said, Rabbi, how do you pass it? He said, what, midi b'achri? He said, it's a different thing. So do whatever you want. So in the middle of the discussion, so I just wanted to make 100% sure that medically there was no real need for this. It was just a convenience kind of an issue. So his doctor found out about this discussion. His doctor said, no, he really needs it. Medically, it's very, very important for medically that he should be, his mouth should be moist. You know, I found it hard to believe what the medical advantage was. I understand what the Mishnah tzarech was. It's hard to believe that it was a medical tzarech. So it was a little bit tricky for me to argue with the doctor, because the doctor had been my chavrusa. We had learned Maseches Chulin together like 20 years before in Marsha Kol. So we hadn't seen each other in a long time. So we were fighting, we were having machlokes on Erev Yom Kippur about the shaila. Is this called tzarech? Is this the middle category, or is this the doctor category? So fake speaker. Maybe the doctor's right, maybe the doctor's wrong, and the Mishnah's right. So we were pummeling back and forth about this. And I don't know whatever he did. I don't know. Once, years later, Baruch Hashem is healthy, he's married, a bunch of kids. So all's well that ends well, but I'm not sure what he ever did on that Yom Kippur when he had the ice chips in there. Anyway, back to that story. So we have these chaylas on Yom Kippur, so we're going to feed them. And to some degree, we're going to try Pachas B'Gashia, whatever you think the definition of that is. So how are we going to measure this Pachas B'Gashia? How are we going to figure this out? So we mentioned before that the shear is important both in terms of number and in terms of time. So we're aiming for 99% of the time, it's a question of drinking. Most chalim don't really have to eat on Yom Kippur. Most of the time, it's people who have these complicated stories that they have to drink in Yom Kippur. So when you have to drink in Yom Kippur, we try to give you moy lukmov, a little bit less than moy lukmov. We want to spread it out as much as we can. So we would prefer to spread it out, kedechilas pras. That's the biggest chumra. So how much is kedechilas pras? So you have a span. Some say it's as little as 2 minutes, some say it's as much as 9 minutes. So how do we pass in that locha? So in America, I think most rabbanim go with try to get the 9 minute shear. So we'll tell somebody take a little shot glass or something. You know, little shot glasses are an ounce. Some that are 2 ounces, those you can't use, those are too big. But the little small ones are an ounce. You take a little bit less than that. So that's unless you have a tiny, tiny person, because moy lukmov is a shear depending on the size of the person's mouth, but it's unlikely. An average sized person is not going to be not going to have such a small mouth. So if you take less than an ounce of the shot glasses and you spread them out over every 10 minutes, so then you probably There are issues that come up very, very often. You get shaylas about pregnant women fasting on Yom Kippur. So if the woman has some very real a medical concern, so okay, then you have to take that to the utmost seriousness. The issue is that it gets sometimes a little bit gray. That one can imagine that the standard procedure in the medical world is not to encourage pregnant women to fast. So if you get a doctor who's kind of following the quote unquote the standard procedures, so say, "What? You're going to fast? That's terrible." woman is terrible. She's in her fifth month. She's feeling totally fine. She doesn't have any complications. And her great-great-grandmother since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu fasted on Yom Kippur. And nothing ever happened to them. So, like, what exactly is the Safek Pikuach Nefesh? So it's not exactly clear what the Safek Pikuach Nefesh is. So we have to talk to the rabbi and the doctor and try to figure out what's going on. So if there's any, some women talk really should not be fasting on Yom Kippur and Hanami. Some should be having Pachos B'Kashiyah. So you have to figure out exactly what the application is. There was a doctors are nervous towards the end of pregnancy about early labor because fasting brings on can sometimes cause the body to go into labor a little bit too early. So how do we know that? Who proved that to us? It was a famous study that was done in Shari Tzedek Hospital. One year they realized that there are an awful lot of babies that are born the day after Yom Kippur. So they said, it must be a coincidence. And the next year, after a couple of years, they realized every year there are a lot of babies. There are more babies born the day after Yom Kippur than any other day of the year. So it didn't take such a chacham to figure out that must be. So this study appears in the official medical textbooks, if I'm not mistaken. So the Shari Tzedek study that some Hamish doctor figured this out 50 years ago, that fasting brings on labor. So it depends what the woman's up to. So if she's in the end of her ninth month and she's trying to go into labor, so let her fast, she should go into labor. But if she's in her seventh month and she's not particularly interested in going into labor and it's probably not so healthy to go into labor so early. So again, these are details. Anyone has any shyness in the details of when it is or is or not a good idea to go into labor, they should consult with their doctor and their rav, and hopefully everyone will be on the same page to give them proper guidance. Okay. There is another potential related pikuach nefesh issue. That's the issue of children. So the Mishnah says that little children are not supposed to be fasting in Yom Kippur. When we were little, there's always like the big hack in shul, you know, who's still fasting? It's already 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're still fasting? It's still fasting. There's a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, oh, I'm still fasting. There are always two things that would be the sign of frumkeit: how long you fasted in Yom Kippur, and how late your Seder went. Come the first day of Pesach, we had our Seder until 3 o'clock, we're still going, we still have a Seder until Shavuos. We haven't ended last year's Seder yet, so that was said to be the greatest sign of frumkeit. Then you got a little bit older, you realize that both of those are shalakidin, that you're supposed to finish the Seder by Chatzos, and little kids are not allowed to fast. It's a mission. Fair Shemari. The little kids, it says Shemari, also to have the little kids fast. It's dangerous. So when the kids reach a little bit older, so then there's a Shals, Mechanech of the Shals. Then when they reach close to Bar Bas Mitzvah, reach the age of 11, then they're ready, supposed to be Mimashlim. So there are Shirim, there are Dinim, there are details as to, depending on how well the child is, how strong the child is, etc. But just time to have little kids fast is not such a good idea. The Mechas Chinuch has a Sofek as to what the matter for me to give food to the kid. So normally there's a din that I'm not allowed to feed treifas to a child. So that's machal b'yadayim. So what right do I have to feed the child? So mechasidich has a tzad. Maybe it's not only mother mishu b'guch nefesh. The only reason I'm allowed to feed my baby is because it's b'guch nefesh. If that's the case, so then I understand. The kid's been eating all day. It's now, we started the Ila, and the kid comes running and says he needs a chocolate bar. He needs a candy. So he goes all around to all the candy men in shul. He's collecting candies from everybody. What's the b'guch nefesh? So usually the minhag olam is we give the kids candy just to keep them quiet. Pikuach nefesh for the parents, otherwise won't be the dama. So we give them candy, we give them food, even though it's not pikuach nefesh. So the answer probably is, like other rechavim said, they quote from Zichron Yosef, one of the rechavim says that the din of safinu b'yadayim doesn't apply to Yom Kippur. Safinu b'yadayim means I'm not allowed to feed treifas to a child. But Yom Kippur, it's not typhus, it's not treifas. It is a mitzvah sinui. So kotlin is not chayv the mitzvah sinui. So the male is not allowed to eat. So anyone who doesn't have the mitzvah sinui, the male doesn't have an issur of eating on Yom Kippur. So I'm not giving him something that's objectively treif. The kid is not mechuyev in the mitzvah. He's not mechuyev in the mitzvah. Mela, the food is not considered to be treif to him. And mela, it's mutar l'chachil to feed the kids. So that's what most people do. I don't know of anybody who every time a kid asks you for some food on Yom Kippur in the afternoon, you make a cheshbon. Are you pikuach nefesh? Not pikuach nefesh. It's a suffix. He has to be a pediatrician. No, people don't do that. So I think we usually assume against that. We assume that it's okay to feed the kids outright. That somehow the whole Okay, so we have one major topic left off of Yom Kippur, and that's kind of the mitzvahs of tefillah and all the different nuances of the vidois and zman ilah and kol nidreis and whatever other things, assorted topics. So hopefully we'll try to do that next week. That'll give us still a couple of weeks to do some Chanukah stuff. Right? Fair enough? Okay.